So the next speaker is John Chestnut from Invitrogen, who has some very intriguing new techniques that I think we're all kind of excited about.
All right, I'd like to thank Evan and the other organizers to allow me to present our work to you. And my pledge is to not have this sound like an infomercial at all. So my group up the street in Carlsbad is working on engineering of stem cells in certain ways. And one of the projects we're working on is using the Fi-C31 family of integrases to create cell platforms for certain applications. So one of the areas that we're very interested as far as applications is concerned is use of stem cell-derived cells and tissues for drug discovery. So the idea here is that the field is using currently transformed cells and primary cells from cadavers to do their drug screening assays. And for various reasons listed here, those sources really aren't optimal. So ideally, we would like to use tissues derived from stem cells to be able to have a more relevant platform to be able to do drug screening and toxicity testing and so forth. So generally, we can get good genetic consistency, and then ideally, if we do our job right, we can have high flexibility of assays. Of course, I wouldn't be standing here if there weren't hurdles to talk about. We're working mostly on the molecular biology, and there's expansion and high-efficiency differentiation, isolation of populations, and characterization and validating the... Oops, wrong way. Okay. Uh-oh. Oh, it helps. So basically, the easiest part of this project was complete when we finished this cartoon. What we want to do is to start with our engineered cell and be able to expand those cells in the pluripotent state, hopefully very efficiently, then work on methods to differentiate those cells to a desired population, and then if needed, and probably will be needed, is to enrich or isolate these populations and then use those cells for whatever particular application. Okay. So the system that I'm going to talk to you about today really consists of a couple different modules. And the first module is how to efficiently assemble expression constructs into plasmids that we can then target into the cell. And I'm not going to go into much detail about what we're using, but the system is basically a multi-site gateway. It's a recombinase-based cloning system that allows us to rapidly assemble multiple elements into one plasmid. So we can do 5, 6, 8 different fragments into one plasmid and create rather large expression constructs. And the second piece of this is the targeting piece. So we've decided on a family of integrases from Streptomyces, Fi-C31, and its sister integrases, R4. And what I'll talk to you about is how we're creating these platform cell lines. And what I'll tell you is that the work that I'm presenting today was done in karyotypically abnormal line BGO1V, and we're using that for several reasons, none of them scientific. But we think that that cell platform is a valid platform for a lot of applications, and in currently we're working on recapitulating this system in normal cell lines. So in the end of the day, we want to have an engineered cell platform to be able to use for multiple applications. So the reason we landed on Fi-C31 is really we had a choice of either doing a blunt force transfection or using lentivirus. And lentivirus is good for a lot of things, but there's some limitations as far as payload capacity, copy number control, and integration site. So we came upon the Fi-C31 family of integrases, and we really think that this solves many of those problems. Essentially, the first step is getting a platform into the cell line, and Fi-C31 has a great attribute of being able to recognize what are pseudo-attachment sites in the genome, and this has been found in mouse and Drosophila and plant and human transformed cells. And the The good news about these pseudocytes, they tend to be in transcriptionally active parts of the genome and in intergenic regions, so either in introns or in intergenic spaces. So very rarely do these land in an exon, which was also good news for us. So what we do then, we're using FISC31 to find a good place in the genome to land a target site. And so the target site then has an R4 integrase attachment site next to a conditional antibiotic marker. So the first pass was to use the integrase and target our cell lines and then analyze what target sites we found. So we used a plasmid rescue technique to where we isolated our targeted cells and we digest out the genomic DNA and circularize that and then clone those out and then sequence off the ends into the genomic DNA so we can find out where these guys are. So essentially we came up with a long list of pseudo-site, target sites in the genome. All of them except for only the yellow shaded ones had been described previously. The non-shaded ones we think are specific to ES cells, and which is interesting in the sense that one thinks that the chromatin in ES cells is in a different form than it is in differentiated cells. So we think that these might be more open areas, and we're a little concerned because really the next step we want to make sure we have a site that doesn't get shut down when the cells get differentiated. So another thing that we found in this is that we found there were certain sites that we call tend to be hotspots, so they get to be targeted and a little bit more efficient than some of the other ones. So here are our hotspots, and the ones in red are the ones that I'm going to talk about. And actually, our favorite right now is chromosome 13, and I'll be spending a lot of time on this specific site. Oh, and the other thing I can mention here is that so we can find these genes in the gene or these sites in the genome, and then we can find the nearest neighbor genes, and that's actually pretty helpful because then we can go and screen these sites for sites that we think have the best chance of being transcriptionally active when the cells differentiate. So I just did a quick scan of the Weissman expression database for some of these sites that are next to these genes, and we're able to categorize a few of these that were that the genes around them are expressed in adult tissues. So we're able to shorten our list a little bit as well. So I'm going to talk about this guy who fortunately not only is a hotspot, but it also is the gene that this is in the first intron of, citrate lyase beta lyase, is also expressed in high levels in adult tissue. So far we're thinking we're doing pretty good. The next thing to do would be to take the cell clones that we have and see that they're single copy numbers. So hopefully, ideally, we'd like to have just one target site in that locus. So we were able to do that, and these are three of the clones that that we screen, and we can tell whether it's on the plus strand or the minus strand. They can go in either orientation. And this is not to say that we didn't mess up a few cells by doing this. I mean, we first screen for karyotype, and we discard the cells that have a non-parental karyotype, and then go through and make sure that they're single copy numbers. So we're about, I think, in the neighborhood of 50-50 of the cells were parental karyotype and some had altered karyotype. And we don't know whether that's due to the manipulation and transfection or whether that's due to the integrase itself. But suffice to say, the integrase that we're using here is transiently expressed. So as soon as we isolate the cells, the integrase is gone, so it shouldn't be doing any dastardly things. So we're focusing on these clones right now, and some of the data I'm going to show you is done in another clone as well. So the next step is to, we have our target cell, and the next step is to retarget that. So that's really where the bread and butter of the system is. So in the first set of experiments, we just assembled a simple promoter reporter. So we have the EF1-alpha promoter-driving GFP. And this was done using our gateway system. And in the target vector, we have an R4 recognition site and a promoter that drives into that site. And here we have our target cell line with our R4 site and the conditional, in this case, is zeacin resistance. So this is a promoterless Ziesen cassette nested here in our pseudo site that we've mapped. And in the presence of R4 integrase, ideally we get integration of this guy into this site, and now this promoter is turning on the Ziesen, so we have a positive selection for this event. And in the end, we're up to about 5 or 10 colonies out of 10 to the 6 cells. So I think that's a pretty reasonable transfection or targeting efficiency. And we're at least 95%, and I'll show you in the next slide, that so far we're batting 100% of properly targeted clones. So we just set up a very simple PCR screen for all the clones. And not to bore you with all these things, basically, we're 12 out of 12 of the 293 cells that we've engineered, and so far 34 out of 34 properly targeted ES cell clones. What we're currently working on is to take these guys and make sure that they're single copy number. So I think ideally we would like to have a single copy number retargeting. There are R4 pseudocytes in the genome. So for most applications, we would like to have a single copy number, but I don't think it's necessarily necessary to have that for many applications, as long as we know that we're in this chromosome 13 site. So the next thing we wanted to do was see, well, can we analyze this site for silencing during differentiation? So we took the first thing we did is check passage stability. So we had some clones that we've retargeted, and they were very bright, especially for any single copy gene. And we took them over 21 passages and showed that they were very stable, the GFP expression. We then took a couple of those clones and differentiated them out into embryo bodies. And we did a 21-day EB and show here by PCR that the cells are differentiated, showing the standard differentiation markers. And then we did a FACS, so these are all GFP-positive cells. So here are our undifferentiated cells, and here's an unengineered cell line, and here's the expression from a 21-day embryo body. So essentially, the large percent, probably 80 or 90% of the cells in the population are still fluorescing very brightly. And just as an example, so we're interested in neurons, at least for the first type of lineage that we want to really drill down on. So I just have a shot of a field in an EB that are beta-3 tubulin positive cells and overlay with GFP. So we have got to the first step where we can make glowing neurons, and lots of other people have done that. But we think that this now, we at least can go and look down in the neural lineage and start putting in multiple type of complex expression constructs. So the next thing was try to push the system. So we wanted to not deal with lentivirus because of the capacity issues. So we are also interested in expressing multiple genes at this specific locus. Anything you can code into DNA, you can clone in here. So it doesn't have to be a reporter or a promoter. It could be shRNAs. It could be overexpressing particular genes and so on. But there's certain issues when you start lining things up in tandem to express them. You start seeing what's called promoter interference. So in this experiment, we're just looking at different insulators to try to mitigate whatever promoter interference we see in the cells. So essentially, we have EF1 alpha driving GFP and the same promoter driving RFP. Ideally, the overlay would be, the expression would be equal. And we just see here, without an insulator, we see a preponderance of green expression, and the red's kind of down. And as we check this particular insulator, we see the red coming up. And these images are only a week or so old, so we're growing these out, and we'll be doing more quantitative measurements of gene expression here. But the other take-home message here is that, so we've popped in an 11 kb piece at this locus relatively efficiently. We've gone up to 13 kb and still with good efficiency. So I don't think we've really pushed the limit of this system. And you'll notice that this is a 5-fragment piece, so we were able to jockey in pieces of DNA relatively easily. We have an entire toolbox of elements, I think 50 or so elements that we've isolated and cloned that can be addressed very quickly and put into these type of configurations. So we're getting very pleased with you know, where the locus, what locus we're in that's fairly stable, and that we can put things in there and do some assays. And so we're getting down the line to doing some really more interesting things. So bottom line, with this platform, and we're focusing first on drug discovery applications and screening, but I think you'll agree that this could be useful for a lot of different applications. We can do lineage tracking. We've done two genes so far. I think that it shouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to do three or more genes. We could potentially look at multiple different loci in the same cell. So we have three loci that we're following right now, chromosome 13 and a couple other ones. Nothing says that we can't take a target cell line and retarget it as somewhere else. And so you can really start putting a lot of things in there. Like I said, you can do cell perturbation, combination of any of these technologies. And it will allow you to create a allelic series of cell lines that have expression or perturbation cassettes in at the same locus, so that you'll basically get the same genetic background from line to line, and should help you compare experiments more efficiently. Once you get over the activation energy of getting the gateway system and everything going in the lab, it should really shorten the developmental timeline for these things. So doing the gateway procedure is very rapid, and we can put together one of these vectors in say 3 weeks, relatively easy. And things that, if you're using restriction enzyme and ligase, it may never happen. So this system, I think, is very efficient. And again, that doesn't rule out combining it with existing technologies. So we have lots of ideas and plans for putting in, flox cassettes or this sort of thing, or flip cassettes, to be able to coexist with this system. And like I mentioned, customization is facilitated, I think, by using different elements. So essentially, that's kind of where we are in this just brief talk. We've been working on developing this platform. We're learning a lot about the locus, the loci that we're working in, and we're getting comfortable with the stability of the locus and how it's resistant to silencing during differentiation. And now, basically, this year, we're going toward more applications, content-oriented experiments, and our first foray is really down into the neural lineage. And this is the group that did the work. Up the street in Carlsbad, and I want to thank them, and I'd like to thank Mahendra, of course, for his unflagging support and encouragement. Thank you.
Same promoter. Have you tried any yet where you have two different promoter or enhancer elements? So, for instance, maybe you can drive expression of a reporter in a progenitor cell line and then also in like a differentiated cell.
Yeah.
So you could pull out distinct populations as opposed to just like two colors in one.
Right. So we have those constructs made and those are going in. One of the ideas for the two-color system is to have a constitutive red and then a lineage green, and then you could do a two-color, like a ratiometric assay. So those constructs are made, and they're going in cells right now. Actually, we have them in cells right now, and we're just growing the cells out to do that. We've done most of the lineage markers by themselves, just green, just on and off green, but we're waiting to see how well we can do with the two-color assays. And one of the other things that we're anticipating also is to use lineage-specific promoters driving a selection reagent that may be a membrane-bound tag that you can then select the cells out using that way as well.
We're running a little late, so I think we're going to skip any additional questions and move on to the next speaker.